factory activity slowed.
Based on hitting a shareholder value as market capitalization.
A lot more global. So creating more programming not only for, you know, us here in the English-speaking U.S.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
All right, welcome to the weekend Friday afternoon. Steve Bertrand here in the Allstate Skyline studio as we get set for the Wintrust Business Lunch on this Friday afternoon. The Cubs, how much are the Cubs worth, do you think? You know, the Cubs have sort of been being kicked around. They've had some bad news in recent weeks, or maybe unpopular news, I guess. Robert Chanik is out with a story fresh at ChicagoTribune.com about their value. And the headline says $2.15 billion. We'll talk to Robert about that a little bit later in the program. Tom Gimbel will be here from the LaSalle Network. Let's keep it going. We'll talk about a high acquisition talent, Bryce Harper, going to the Philadelphia Phillies. We'll see what Tom says, not about that so much, but about bringing in high-figure, high-priced, high-value talent to the workplace. But we usually start on Fridays with Andrea Haines from the Chicago Tribune, and she's here. And Andrea and I, well, you know, we text back and forth a lot during the evening, but
constantly.
Not tonight, Andrea.
Not tonight. We're gonna have to entertain ourselves another way.
It's an unplugged day or something like that.
So the National Day of Unplugging starts at sundown. I will fail at that.
Is it a Jewish holiday?
It does kind of sound, you know, it seems in the same spirit, right? You take a day to just like set aside the electronics and try to live an actual life, which I personally know I can't do.
Let me tell you something. I haven't been succeeding, but I need to be better at this because I reach for my phone during any downtime. You know, I'm sure you do too, 300, 400, 500 emails a day. So it's like a video game with me. I'm just deleting. So I'm always, if the elevator isn't there, my phone is out. If I'm in the elevator, my phone is out. And it's just too much.
I am the same way. I mean, I had to stop myself from checking Twitter while I was walking over here. I mean, it's literally madness. It's just truly a habit. It's become almost like you're saying a muscle memory habit. Like you just reach for it. You don't even know what you're doing and you're putting it in your face. And we were talking a little bit about the election and what a busy week it was for us in the news business. And that meant that every single night when I went home, all I was doing, my eyes were wide open and glued to Twitter and glued to the news sites, glued to ChicagoTribune.com, like every night. And it's like, you really notice you can't relax. You can't wind down. You don't go to sleep on time. Like it really does have an impact.
Yeah. You know, I'll be watching. Well, this week I was watching Marquette play basketball on TV. They had a night game. And, you know, during the down times, a commercial or something, my phone is within a foot of me. I would grab it, look at something. And then the commercial ends and the game's going on and I'm still looking at my phone. And I just have to set it away. You know, there are a few people, three or four people in the world who I want to hear from right away when I hear from them. The rest of it can just wait. And I've got to get better at learning to just make them wait.
Yeah. And I think one challenge that, you know, that I know I have is like, even if I do want to do something else, like cook a recipe or make a shopping list, I do it all on my phone.
Right.
So I still find that I can't break free of it. And then once I'm on the phone, what am I doing? I'm back in email, back on Twitter. So yeah,
it's that peripheral stuff. I was actually moved my mother-in-law on Wednesday. And so I had my least phone time during the day ever and had like by 3 o'clock, 250 emails. But I kind of realized, I didn't look at my phone for 6 hours and I survived.
You survived, and everyone else did too, right?
Starting at sundown, we're all going to turn our phones. And so is it 24 hours in? So it's all day tomorrow?
Yeah, so there's 77% of Americans own a smartphone, which I'm surprised it's not more.
Right.
You know what? It's only 77%. And we check our phones on average 52 times a day. So the National Day of Unplugging is going to encourage you to put that device down, take a break. You know, the story from the business section mentions that a 2017 study linked severe depression to the rise of smartphones. So it's definitely, I think it increases our anxiety and probably good to take a break.
Yeah, there's way too much. And nothing comes from it. I think that's kind of the point. You know, if I'm looking at Twitter or Instagram, I don't need to do it.
Yeah, and those make you feel like you're going to miss something. So that's the problem, right? An email, you know, will still be there tomorrow. But on Twitter, I feel like if you don't see it in the moment, you're going to miss it. And that creates this loop.
All right, let's. So you were talking about how you've been busy this past week with the election and Everyone sort of put their feet up or exhaled maybe on Wednesday. There's a piece in Chicago Tribune about the tech community, and I was asking the folks from Chicago Inno about this Monday about who the tech candidate was, but they kind of sat out the gang of 14, didn't they?
They did. It was interesting, and I think, you know, businesses often will do that if there's not a clear candidate or somebody they're really devoted to, because they don't want to find that they've backed a loser, right, and feel like they're already on the outs with the new mayor before the person even gets started. So I don't think it's unusual for businesses to maybe be a little bit conservative about it. But I kind of wanted to know who was doing what. So I actually took a look. And, you know, one interesting potential in would have been that Neil Salas Griffin, who very much springs from the 1871 community, was on the ballot. But that candidacy didn't take off.
Terrible start, too, as I remember. Right?
I want to know more about this. I hope that Neil will write his memoirs and someday this will fit into his life narrative and it will all make sense, because Neil's a great guy. He's popular. This just didn't seem like it had his full attention or something. I feel like there's an unknown part to this. And Neil, I'm sure, has a long and great career ahead of him. But that candidacy did not mobilize the tech community in any kind of meaningful way. You know, Bill Daley was considered to be the big business favorite in certain ways, but that didn't get him elected and didn't seem to really, you know, inspire the tech community either. So it'll be interesting to see if they take more of a stand next round.
I mean, they've got a very pro-tech governor now in J.B. Pritzker. Maybe they just took some comfort in that.
Could be. You know, J.B. being one of the, you know, driving force behind 1871, so they definitely have him in that seat. But, you know, Chicago, you want to have the mayor's ear to a degree, so I'm interested to see what will happen.
Have we sized up Lightfoot and Preckwinkle? Do we know who might be more pro-tech? Or?
You know, I think it's a little bit hard to tell yet. I think we'll find out more in the coming weeks. I think they both have maybe pros and cons. You know, they have some big business ties, some union ties, some this and that that will need to be sorted out, and people will need to see where they come down on maybe issues more specific to that community.
I get the feeling with these two that it's going to be more of a neighborhood election. You know, like there's the inside out or there's the outside in. Bill Daley was going to bring a lot from the outside into Chicago. I get the feeling with these two that they're going to be focusing in Chicago and growing it out from within.
Which I think is good, right? I mean, it's one thing to bring in big business, and that's the, you know, we're comfortable with that narrative, but I think people are more and more attuned to bringing in other parts of the city to economic success, and hopefully both of these candidates will focus on that.
Maybe you could focus on, you know, Amazon getting deals, and Amazon, I saw the story a week or two ago, they're paying nothing in federal income taxes.
They are, and, you know, that drives people crazy, of course.
And they're not breaking any laws, they're just following the tax, they're doing exactly what I do, that I'm trying to make my tax liability as small as possible.
Yeah, and, you know, so this story is just basically pointing out that what they're doing is perfectly legal, which is using various parts of the tax code to their benefit. You know, Amazon makes tons of money. They have $232 billion in revenue. Jeff Bezos is the world's richest man.
Right.
So people don't like to hear that company is not paying taxes. And then when you had the situation with HQ2 in New York, it kind of boiled over.
The one thing I don't really like is, so one of the ways they reduce their liability is to pay their employees a lot of it in stock. They give the employees stock. So, and I'll just read the sentence of that. So companies can take that deduction off their profits at a 21% tax rate. So that's that. But employees who get that money are taxed on that income they receive from those shares at rates that top out at 37%. So us little workers are paying a higher rate for that income than the big company is.
I know. And does that seem fair, Steve?
It does not seem fair. It does not seem like you and I are writing the tax codes, I don't think.
I don't think so.
FedEx will soon be delivering my pizzas? I don't know.
I know, right? Well, I feel like, you know, we're on robot watch here. So whenever there's anything involving robots under lunch, we have to briefly mention it. And FedEx is going into the pizza delivery business, but they plan to use these cute little mini autonomous robots to deliver the pizzas.
All robots are cute, Andrea.
That's true. They have to make them cute so they don't scare us, so we'll let them into our lives.
This is this last mile sort of thing, right? I mean, where everyone's focusing on the last mile, whether it's an electric car, whether it's a scooter. I think I read somewhere, maybe in the story, that half of the cost of delivering a package is in the last mile of it.
Exactly. It's like this sort of, you know, how do you actually get it to someone's house? It's one thing to get it to their city, but then the actual logistics of getting it into people's houses is where the complexity comes in. It's where the expense comes in. So that's why this idea of an automated way to do that is appealing.
And so FedEx will partner with local pizza joints?
Exactly. They have some big partners, including Pizza Hut, They're also partnering on deliveries with Walmart and Walgreens. So partnering with some big places, and, you know, these things might be scooting down the sidewalks sometime soon.
I'm just thinking of someone scooping up a robot to see what's inside. It's like buying a storage locker. You know, you steal a robot and try to crack it open, but I'm hoping they're probably going to be pretty secure.
Yeah, and for city planning purposes, isn't it interesting? I mean, I feel like we're soon going to need to be accommodating robots and, what, scooters and things we haven't even thought of yet.
You know, that is such a great point. The roads, the way we think of them, are not going to be the same in 10 or 20 years from
now. Absolutely. It won't be cars, cars, cars.
No.
And those that are on the roads may be self-driving, right?
One more then. So Marshalls is moving into the online area of retailing, which surprises me. I thought that they're far behind, but in a way, they haven't needed to go online because they've been doing very well when it comes to in-store traffic.
It is. They do. And it's like, it's, you know, and the story mentions this, it's this treasure hunt experience. If you go to a TJ Maxx or a Marshalls or Home Goods, which they also own, there's not very many of everything. And there's a million different things to look at. And I think the browsing, the touching, I always say I can give you the price of any item in a TJ Maxx. That's how much I've shopped there.
Really?
It's very popular for that on-site shopping, even as that becomes overall less popular and people move to online. But Marshalls is stepping into this e-commerce area, and they'll be offering Marshalls brand things for sale on the website, which they have not done. They have sites, but it's not actually merchandise for sale on them.
So will that keep you out of the store and online instead?
I don't think so for them. I do a lot of my shopping online personally, but I do like to go to those stores. I mean, it's the thing you didn't know you would have gone looking for, right?
It's the sort of stuff that you didn't, but fun things.
Or sometimes they're useful things that you just wouldn't have thought of.
Or sometimes you talk yourself into thinking they're useful and you just really just fill up your cart.
That's true. That is definitely true.
Andrea Haines, read more at chicagotribune.com. Thanks for coming by. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Steve. You too.
Put your phone down.
I'll try for maybe an hour. How about an hour?
Okay, we'll do that. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. It is at 12:23. Coming up after the news headlines, we'll talk to Robert Chanek, a writer for the Chicago Tribune, just out with a story putting a value, a price tag on the Chicago Cubs. And, well, that price tag is over $2 billion, so we'll talk to Robert about that. Also, Front Row Phyllis will come by, and I'm going to try to persuade her to imitate Stevie Nicks. But right now, really, when it comes to imitating Stevie Nicks, no one tops Tom Gimbel, the CEO of LaSalle Network. Tom, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
I love Landslide.
That's mine, too. That's so funny you say that. Is it Landslide? That my daughter will text me. She'll say, I'm listening to your favorite Fleetwood Mac song. So that's one we
share.
I love
it. Yeah. I love Fleetwood Mac.
Well, I like some Fleetwood Mac, not a lot. I don't like the Phillies.
Ugh. So, I don't like the Nationals either, though. And I don't care for the Padres, actually.
So I want to talk about sort of maybe equilibrium when it comes to employees in the workplace. So Bryce Harper signs, what, a $330 million contract with the Philadelphia Phillies. You know, that's if you're running an organization and you're paying a high price for someone to come in based on what they've done in the past, I mean, that's got to be a sort of a, not a risky assessment, but a careful assessment.
It's one of the things that the transparency in sports is actually a good analogy for business because it does happen. And where you see it primarily is companies that hire a lot of kids out of college and they're paying entry-level salaries. And then you go and hire somebody who's an experienced veteran in the space and you bring them on for an exorbitant salary. Now, salaries aren't transparent like they are in sports.
Right.
But you have somebody who's half, a third, maybe a tenth of what somebody else costs. And they work harder, they do better work, they integrate more easily into the culture, and you wonder why you're paying like that. And, you know, we don't have to look at the Phillies, we have it here. I mean, look at Hayward. Hayward came in at a huge salary, more than Bryan or Rizzo or Contreras or any of those guys, but yet his personality, he was humble and hardworking and showed up, and there wasn't any resentment from the team. You know, fans are a different issue.
I was going to say, there was resentment until, the ninth inning of Game 7, I think.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it was from the players.
Okay.
Right? And
yeah.
Because there's a business aspect. And what good management and good leadership has to do is they have to explain that sometimes you do have to bring somebody in who's more expensive. And actually, the best managers will sometimes bring people in from the outside who are even more expensive than they are, because they know they have to get the best talent. The key is how you sell that internally, how you explain it. And if you just put your head in the sand, people are smarter than you give them credit for.
Right. And so if you were that talent coming in, I would imagine you have to tread a little carefully as well. If you know, I mean, I would imagine that if you are being paid 10 times what some of your coworkers are being paid, some of those guys or women are going to walk in with a little bravado, which would be just the wrong thing to do.
Yes, you need to come in even more humble than you are if you're humble to begin with. But yes, when you come into any organization, regardless of what you're made, especially if, you know, again, let's get away from the sports analogy. You come into a company that's hopefully doing well and you're brought in at a level, you want to come in with a certain sense of humility. You want to go to the happy hours. You want to be the first one in and the last one to leave and show that there's a reason you have that title or that level of responsibility. And if they somehow would know how much money you have, or if it's a publicly traded company and you got shares of stocks that would be disclosed, even for an incoming CEO or C-suite person, they should behave that way. Your job in joining a company is to earn the respect of your peers, no matter what the level.
So job market's really hot right now. Are you seeing that a lot of these high-level employees are moving around, moving up to bigger paychecks, or are a lot of the hires coming from entry-level, from the bottom up?
Yeah, with 3.8% unemployment, what we're seeing right now, or less than 4% unemployment, Steve, you're seeing so much of the hiring being right out of college.
Yeah.
And it's just where the volume of stuff is. And I think the interesting thing is you're seeing a lot of players, just like the sports analogy, getting back to that, is they're taking longer-term deals to make sure that the money's there. And I think you're seeing the same thing within corporate America, that people are saying, you know what, I'm going to ask for a raise where I'm at. I don't want to go test the open market. And being a little bit nervous of when the recession will hit. But I'm pretty bullish on the economy. I think it's going to last for another couple of years.
It's so funny, right? Because we're at the hottest right now. I mean, at least when it comes to unemployment, and people are already starting to hunker down.
Yeah, there is a little bit of Chicken Little syndrome going on right now, and I get it. After 2009, that's 2008, 2009, that's going to happen. But, you know, there really aren't any indicators saying that it is, other than it's just been going on a bull market for almost 10 years. But things are really good, and companies are still needing people, and it's as good a job market as I've seen in my 20-plus years in the business.
So, you know, we're talking a little bit about the superstars coming in to work with the stars. But let's go. Well, stars and superstars is the wrong way to put it. It seems to me like sometimes the least paid employees are the ones who do the most work and are the ones who keep things together the most.
So the reason that's the case is because the expectations are the lowest, and a lot of it is managing expectations, right? So Harper could hit 30 home runs and bat 280 and have 100 RBIs, but the expectations are 50 home runs and 310 and 120 RBIs. It's all expectations, and that's really what you're looking at for new hires. So you have the people that are paid the least. Well, it's usually more of an entry-level job, and the expectations are the lowest, so people look really great.
Tom Gimbel is the CEO of LaSalle Network. Check him out at lasallenetwork.com. Tom, great to talk to you again today. I appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
Yep, see you next week.
Thanks very much, David Jennings. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. All right, the Cubs are playing, as David just said, taking on, I think it was the Diamondbacks today in Arizona. But there's a little news closer to home in Chicago about the value, the worth of the Chicago Cubs. Robert Chanik writes about it at ChicagoTribune.com this afternoon, and he joins us on a phone line now. Bob, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thanks. Good to be here.
You know, I'm reading your story. First of all, I mean, there are numbers that really jump out at me, but one of the ones that jumped out at me was that it's been nearly 10 years now since the Ricketts family took over ownership. I would not have put it at that long.
Yeah, no, it seems like only yesterday, but a lot of things have happened since then, including a little thing called the World Championship.
Yeah, well, a lot. You and I were living through that company. A lot of things were happening in those days. So,
oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Things have changed a little bit. Okay, and so it's because of that company, because Tribune Company used to own the Cubs. They sold it to the Ricketts, but Tribune Company then split, and Tribune Media retained some ownership of the ball club, correct?
They kept a 5% stake after. So they sold the team, Wrigley Field, the whole shooting match. to the Ricketts family in 2009 for $845 million, but that was 95% of the team. Tribune kept 5%. And in January, a deal was struck, and the Cubs bought that remaining 5% from Tribune Media. And today we found out what they paid for it, which was kind of interesting because it gives you a very, very good idea of what the team is worth.
They paid $107.5 million for that 5%. Right. You do the math and you tell me what the team is worth then.
Well, 5%, you multiply that number by 20, and you come up with $2.15 billion. So that transaction values the Cubs, Wrigley Field, everything that comes with it at $2.15 billion, which is a lot more than the Ricketts paid and a heck of a lot more than Tribune paid back in 1981 when they bought the team from the Wrigley family for $21
million. $21 million in 1981 for the Chicago Cubs, and now it's $2.15 billion.
Good investment, if you can get it.
Well, and the Ricketts have certainly done a lot to improve the product, right? I mean, the curb appeal is certainly there.
Absolutely. I mean, first of all, they won a World Series after, a century-long drought. They've renovated Wrigley Field and turned Wrigleyville into an adult amusement park, if you will. I mean, they've done a lot, and they've really increased the value. There's no question. They put in a lot of money and sweat equity to get it from where it was 10 years ago.
So if the Cubs are worth $2.15 billion, do you know off the top of your head, or did you, as part of your reporting, look to see how that fits with other baseball teams?
It's near the top. To be honest, I don't have those figures at my fingertips, but I have looked at it before. The Cubs are one of the most valuable baseball franchises, and I'm sure this puts them right near the top of the list.
It also comes at a time, you tell me, is this... I guess it's neither good news nor bad news for the Cubs. It just talks about their valuation. But they certainly have had kind of a rough off season when it comes to mostly off-the-field news.
I think there's been a lot of business news, certainly things that I've covered that maybe have caused some disruption with fans, the new TV network and ending the long relationship with GN for over-the-air broadcast on TV. That certainly upset a few folks, although it is the trend. I mean, the regional sports network, pay TV, is the norm in sports and certainly in baseball. So it was something we saw coming for years. I mean, they've been telegraphing that for over 5 years that was coming. You have a whole handful of things, I think, that people were a little bit disappointed with, you probably know them as well as I do, but baseball starts soon enough, and hopefully the momentum will pick up again if the team does well on the field.
And if not, we'll have something fresh to be angry about. But, it's funny, interesting, I guess, because we've had a lot of conversations about that. I'm no longer going to be a Cub fan. I'm going to change my allegiance. And, we broadcast the White Sox fans. I welcome everyone to listen and cheer for the White Sox, too. But when those conversations were going on, I'm sure the Ricketts family is going to own the team for a good long time. But you pointed out that, in my lifetime, the Wrigleys have owned the team. The Tribune Company owned the team for decades, and now there's a new owner. I have been a Cub fan through those different regimes. It's almost as if the ownership of the team is less permanent than the team itself, right? So are you going to change your allegiance because of a temporary owner? I guess that's one of the ways I look at it. I don't know what you make of that sort of convoluted logic.
Fandom runs deep. It runs deep. Yeah. I've been a Cubs fan for many years. Been around for, I remember the 69 Cubs breaking my heart, but I stood by them. I will say anecdotally, if it's of any interest, my late father, 2005, just switched teams.
Really?
He said, Cubs, he watched the Sox. They had a great team. They won a World Series, and God bless him. He had a great season, so it happens. I can at least say that, but it's very hard to, I think, switch allegiances when you've been a fan for many, many years. And like you said, I've been a fan through a series of owners, really, if you look at the long run, but upstate stuck on the Cubs throughout. So, we'll see if the problems that people perceive with ownership affects their commitment and loyalty to the team. And there has been a lot of talk. I agree. People are, you know, but we'll see if that really plays out, right?
Yeah, well, it's easy to talk during the winter. It'll be much different to see what happens during the spring and the summer. Robert Chanik, read more about the story at ChicagoTribune.com. I know you joined us on short notice. I certainly appreciate that, Bob. Thank you.
My pleasure. Glad to do it.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer. Because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Update alert. About a week ago, I talked about UI Labs over on Goose Island and how they're using brand new technologies to keep various industries, companies, and employees up to date by integrating them firsthand. Who wouldn't want to take a field trip to Goose Island to try out virtual reality goggles? The point, UI Labs is changing their name to MXD, short for Manufacturing Times Digital. And the CEO, Carolyn Nowinski-Collins, is stepping down as CEO, remaining on the board, though, and Chandra Brown will take over the role. Maybe she's just looking for a little more time for herself and to relax in Hawaii? Maybe, maybe not. But either way, she'll be able to take a direct flight to the Hawaii Islands through Southwest. But unfortunately, those direct lines won't be going from Midway. Southwest just got approval to run direct flights to the islands from San Jose, Oakland, Sacramento, and San Diego. And let me remind you, those tickets aren't cheap. So when customers have flight options, that's a win for us, baby. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. We thank them for that here on 720 WG. And, of course, I grew up in Manteno, just adjacent to Piatone. I don't want to give Piatone too much credit, but would spend my week every summer at the Will County Fair there in Piatone, Illinois. On a phone line now is Front Row Phyllis to talk about some things to do this weekend. Phyllis, welcome back to the Biz Lunch. How are you?
I am good. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Now, I see I'm looking at frontrowphyllis.com, and at the press section, I think it's the press section of your webpage, there's a number of pictures of the two of us. I like that. It's the back of,
I know.
You look better than me. It's the back of my head, but that's okay. It's your page. I get it.
Well, we'll kind of reverse it. It's okay.
No. I know who the star of the page is. I get that.
Yeah. Well, we got a lot of stuff going on this weekend. You know that, right?
What's the big show is Fleetwood Mac, right?
Yes. So due to overwhelming demand by their, of course, fans, they actually added extra dates last year onto the North American tour. And, of course, we happen to be one of them, which we're pretty lucky to have them back here in Chicago tonight over at the United Center. And the lineup, of course, includes Mick Fleetwood, John McVie, Stevie Nicks, and Christine McVie.
Yeah, who's so your? So my daughter, actually, she's all about L.A. now, but she was, when she first moved to Los Angeles last year, went to a taping of The Ellen Show, and Fleetwood Mac was the guest.
And wow.
And then Ellen gave everyone in the audience a couple of tickets. So Emma saw Fleetwood Mac, I think it was at the Hollywood Bowl, maybe two or three months ago on this tour. Who's your favorite Fleetwood Mac member?
You know what? Stevie Nicks. She always has been. I just love her. How about you?
Well, Christine McVie. I like her voice much better. I'm not a big Stevie Nicks fan. I like some of the Fleetwood Mac, but I don't like any of the... And she went through that duet phase, which really drove me up a tree. So,
right.
I'm all for
Christine.
Well,
I can tell you that they will be performing all of their hits that the fans love, as well as there's going to be some surprises. So you definitely want to, there are seats still available
want
to check it out tonight.
So it's at the United Center, and you can still get tickets for that.
You can,
What a contrast. Tomorrow at the United Center is a Kiss show?
It is. I know. This is, you know what? It is called the end of the road. Of course, after an epic 45-year career, it is their final tour. And they certainly aren't coming back, because I've actually confirmed that, saying, are they maybe going to come back for a couple shows? Because sometimes these guys do that, but they're not. They're actually not going to.
So who's Gene Simmons, I know, is still touring with them, and one other.
Gene Simmons, there's two of the guys. So it's Gene Simmons and one of the other guys, and then the other two guys are newer, but they weren't the original ones.
They weren't the original ones, but I think they've been with them for 20 years, so I guess it probably would count. Okay, so we got Fleetwood Mac tonight, Kiss tomorrow night.
Right.
Tell me about Mamma Mia at the Drury Lane Theater.
I am so excited. We got a chance to hang out with the cast the other day, and we got to interview them as well as see the production. And I have to tell you, Steve, you need to unleash your inner dancing queen and fall back in love with Mamma Mia. That's all I got to say.
I'm going to tell you something. I'll tell you right now that I do not have an inner dancing queen. I might have a lot of things, but that is not one of them.
So it is running now through April 14th over at the incredible Drury Lane Theater, which I love because it's such a great, easy venue. There's not a bad seat in the house. And then just sit back and watch this incredible, heartwarming, you know, funny story and ABBA's, you know, greatest hits.
Now that's
you definitely want to check it out.
The Drury Lane, is that in Oak Brook or Oak Lawn? Where's the Drury Lane?
Yeah, that is in Oak Brook.
Oak Brook, okay. All right, so there's that. Oh, one more. I don't know, Alvin Alley, that's a dance company?
It is. So Alvin Alley is running from March 6th through the 10th, and they are actually celebrating their 60th anniversary and 50 years performing over at the Auditorium Theater.
Wow.
So it comes always this time of year. It's always the beginning of March. And in celebration, they're actually bringing its first time ever two-act ballet to the theater, as well as they're going to end each performance with Ailey's signature, which is Revelations, and just a true masterpiece. Their audience loves this.
Alvin
Ailey. So, yeah, you definitely. Alvin Ailey. Phenomenal.
March 6th through the 10th. Okay, so we got a while. All right, Phyllis, well, listen, well, why don't you just sing us one of your favorite Fleetwood Mac songs as we go out here?
Should I do that? You know what? I think we're going to go to commercial again.
We'll talk again soon, okay?
You got it.